Signs of the Southland, Sunday, 6th of August, 2023. Mr. Grant, Mr. Purdy, the West Coast has effectively disintegrated in terms of sports. Women's basketball has departed for their trip through Croatia and Spain during this preseason, and Finland placed third at the World University Games in Chengdu. That was their U22 team with Georgia Tech alum Lotomai Lotnin. That is basically all of the sports news, other than football, which we'll get
Let's
to.
note. Let's
Do
note.
you have?
Lotomai hasn't played a game since she played at Tech. She signed a contract with the Belgian team and never played because she had a big knee injury she had to get healed up on. So these were her first games in like a year, and she was by far one of the biggest prospects coming out of that year with Kubai and Bates and all of them. So really good to see her playing again.
Absolutely. More on football and unfortunately more realignment news because Jack has forced both Jake and I to talk about this yet again. And also, there's more
Relevant.
news.
It's relevant.
After our interview, we have a lovely interview prepared for you all today. Mr. Grant, why don't you do us the honor of introducing our guest?
Yes. So today we've got Tiffany. She is going to be talking to us about gymnastics and why it would be a great fit for Georgia Tech. This is probably our most recurring-y summer bit is the pitch us on a sport, or we're going to talk about a sport and why it'd be a great fit at Tech. Tiffany, you are a Tech grad. You can talk about that. You can talk about what you're doing now, and how that ties into the sport that you broached to us as one you wanted to talk about as a good fit here on the Flats. So, what do you got?
Hello to everyone on the podcast. Like Jake said, I'm a tech grad about a year out, and I am now doing my PhD at the University of Texas at Austin. So I can talk about club gymnastics at Georgia Tech. I can talk about club gymnastics at Texas. But that's about it. I have not had any NCAA experience. But I can talk about the club scene for sure.
It, the lack of NCAA experience does not stop Jack and myself from talking
Nope.
about swimming. So
Nope.
you can't sell yourself too short there. So you came up doing the sport, you got involved at Tech. I take it you had been involved before you got to Georgia Tech, correct?
Yeah, I did it the whole club scene from like 5 to age 18, like the whole thing.
Okay.
And wanted to keep doing it when I was in college. So when I got to Georgia Tech, joined the club team, kind of did it sporadically on and off, but definitely was a part. A big part of, especially my senior year.
Okay. What was your best event?
Great question. It depends on the day. Definitely not bars. Probably floor. Maybe sometimes beam. Not
Okay.
bars at all. I'm not a bars person.
So I take it it's like swimming in that regard, right? You got your stroke and you kind of stick to what you know. They put you in the events and whatnot that you're kind of is your wheelhouse, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do all of them. It's kind of club gymnastics is very much like, do you want to do it? Sure, like go do it. So I want to do all of them. So I will do all of them. I'm just like not particularly good at bars or even vault. But
Gotcha.
I'll still do them all. Just why not?
So, in terms of growing up doing the sport, what does the scene look like in Atlanta? And now that you're in Texas, if you have any like clue about, you know, what the scene looks like in Texas, this seems to be a pretty popular sport given some of the interactions you see on social media and it's on ESPN and you know the championship's a great draw. What does that look like here in Atlanta or in Texas now?
Yeah, I think gymnastics is definitely growing as a sport, both sort of at the college level and just in general in like the club scene, especially with like every time the Olympics come on, people are super interested in watching. It's one of the most popular like summer Olympic sports. And college gymnastics in particular is growing a lot, especially with Olympians coming going back, not back to college, but like competing in college for the first time in the last couple of years. The championships always bring in a lot of people, and it's been steadily getting more and more popular. So I think just in general, gymnastics is growing as a sport, which is kind of means that it's growing in Atlanta and in lots of places, especially in Texas. I'll get into Texas in a little bit, but just I think it's always growing. It's a pretty popular sport. I think in terms of the Southeast, Georgia is one of the bigger like states for gymnastics. So I think that really helps. And then I guess to go back to Texas, Texas is like the gymnastic state. It's like the most famous, I guess, where a lot of Olympians train. I think out of the five US all around Olympic champions, four of them trained in Texas. So it's like, it's super well known to be a state that has really good gymnastics. And like, this is obviously a tech podcast and not about Texas, but Texas doesn't have a D1 gymnastics program. So it's really crazy. That's kind of crazy, but yeah, I forgot where I was going with that, but that's, yeah, it's a little crazy.
Fair enough. And I think that's kind of a good leeway, or not leeway, a good jumping off point, right? Is there's all this interest. It seems like a relatively untapped market, and it's one that's growing in popularity. One would think it would be a slam dunk, right?
I think it is. I guess there's always caveats, but I mean, part of my argument is that I love gymnastics and everyone should love gymnastics, so we should all get it. But
I agree. I agree.
That's part of my mission to make water polo a sport too, you know. But yeah, so in terms of, you know, you're somebody who's experienced on the mat, you know what the facilities are like. In terms of the setup, when you were at Tech, club team, I take it that's something that you went to the CRC for, or did you have to go off campus to get at least the training part of it in?
Yeah, we had to go off campus, actually. And that's also, okay. And I think that's the case for a lot of these sort of club teams, because gymnastics is ultimately a very expensive sport. It's really hard to get the equipment for it. You need a lot of equipment for it, and especially to train for it versus like in a competition, it requires a lot of space and equipment. So it's not really something that can be built super easily, just like out of any building for any club team. It's definitely an investment. So we had to go off campus and to like different gyms in the Atlanta area.
What gym did y'all primarily use?
We did a couple. There's a gym in Buckhead that's just called like Buckhead Gymnastics that we went to when I was there. Also the, what is it called? Atlanta Gymnastics Center, I think.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. And then we also went to a smaller gym called Jumpstart. So we would literally go to multiple gyms in a week just to like find different places that would let us practice.
Wow.
Because it's not something that we could just like do on campus.
Gotcha. And that seems to be kind of the problem that we run into with a lot of sports here. And I've been putting together some numbers in terms of like just scholarships and how that relates to the share of men and women in the student body and stuff like that. And you see something like hockey rising to the top of the list, because there's, you know, there's 18 scholarships that puts Tech right back in the mix of being Title IX compliant, but having a giant sheet of ice is not particularly inexpensive. And in fact, it's quite expensive. I think when it comes down to not necessarily us, you know, circling places on the map at Tech and saying put a gym there, I think before we get to that, you say there's a lot of facilities that go into it, but like, how often do you have to like replace a bar or a beam or the mats and things like that? Because, you know, that can make a difference too, right? If you're just buying a bar and it's good for 40 years, like that's a bit different than, you know, the ice is always melting, to borrow the hockey example.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you can use a bar for 40 years, but it's not something that you're replacing every year. I guess the big equipment you're probably replacing maybe once a decade, but things like mats get worn down pretty fast, and then you want to replace them so that you have like safe landing services. So it kind of depends, I guess, on the equipment.
Yeah, I imagine your pommel horse and beams are gonna last a while, because it's just it's basically a brick, not exactly brick, but
and things break, and then you definitely have to replace it. And there are also sometimes you can do different things to like sort of fix it temporarily. Like you can recover a beam so that if it did get like surface damage, then you can just recover it. And that's a lot cheaper than getting a whole new beam. So there are different things you can do.
That sounds like a goalpost or like swimming block type thing, especially like a swimming block with a time system where it's like, it's not cheap if you get a good one, but I mean, they're still coasting off some pretty old ones at the pool. So that's kind of at least how my head makes the connection. But yeah, in terms of, you know, podcast flow, Jack, Akshay, do you guys want to do some map circling now, or which way do we want to take this? Do we want to go towards the finance and scholarships, or do we want to look more like how would this fit at Tech?
I like the
honestly
idea.
I want to do some map circling. I want to
do the exercise we did last summer of like, all right, where on campus does this even remotely stand a chance?
The grand tradition of every year building a cap over the building connector. A cap over the connector and then building a facility on top of that. I think just to keep in that grand tradition,
it's
I think probably, we have to circle on
it's
the map.
Probably still the best solution we got in front of us in terms of sheer space amount and new land that could be created quite literally. So unless Art Square decides to not exist, but that ain't happening. So
yeah. Tiffany, I don't know if you heard there, but they're inventing new squares to go along with Tech Square. They've got Science Square and Art Square. And, you know, it's starting to get to the point where they've kind of jumped the shark with the whole squares thing. In terms of on campus. Squares.
I need my arts dodecahedron. Come on, guys. We're Georgia Tech.
Yeah, no.
In all of this irony, they're also getting rid of T Square. So.
Yes. Sunsetting. It's finally sunsetting.
I don't think most people, if they're like new in the last like 3-4 years, would even know what a T square
is. Oh yeah, they never
wait,
used
hold
it.
On,
yeah.
Hold on. Before we get there, Jack, when did you start at Tech?
I started fall of 2017. I had one full academic year with T square.
Okay.
By fall of
2018, I was about to pull that card.
By fall of 2018, it was technically still there, but only used in very rare instances. Canvas was up and running by fall of 2018.
Okay.
I was going to say, I don't even know if Tiffany has used T square. So
I used T square because I did dual enrollment through Georgia Tech my senior year of high school. But that's the only reason why.
That thing is miserable. Anyway, please get back on topic.
So we've already ruled out one, right? And that's a CRC. Honestly, in my head, I kind of assumed that you guys used space there. But even then, you can't really put 2,000 bleachers on that fifth floor of the CRC. So in your expert opinion, if you were going to just knock down a building or pave a parking lot, how much space do you think you'd need? Where would we have to put a building for this?
That is a great question that I'm not sure I have a great answer for, because I have concept of like size of buildings and size of venues. I know a lot of teams will compete out of their basketball arenas, or even like Arkansas competes out of their volleyball arena, but apparently their volleyball arena is extra large, which is why they can do that. But yeah, so a lot of them, so like UGA will compete out of Stegman. Alabama can be set of Coleman. So a lot of basketball arenas tend to be what people use. So probably around the size of a basketball arena. I think it also depends on like how many people you expect. A lot of like smaller D3 teams might even compete out of something the size of like a high school gym. Like a lot of the meets I went to growing up were in high school gyms. So yeah. Something around that size is probably what you need.
Well, even like a Syracuse volleyball uses a pretty high school-y looking gym. So that's fitting of other sports. And also, right. I would not describe not McCamish, but O'Keefe as extra large. I would describe it as extra small. So
it is. Jack. It is the extra extra small building. Surprisingly has more. It can hold more people than Louisville's thing, even though Louisville is a bigger building for that. But yeah, it is still
left. I'm going to take a left turn here. Having been to the House of Pain, I don't know what they call it, but it's a House of Pain. In person. It's not large. Like O'Keefe's definitely a bigger space.
It looks bigger on TV. Okay. TV fooled me once again.
Yeah, it's tiny. Like it's part of their student union. It'd be like if they mushed O'Keefe into the side of the student center or something.
Let's answer the McCamish question there. Can you put the gymnastics things in McCamish? Which the answer would be, if the bleachers weren't like cement, then yes. But they're cement on all four sides. They are not retractable seats, so they're stuck.
So I take it the floor routine for gymnastics is wider than a basketball court? Because that seems to be the limiting factor.
I don't know how big a basketball court is.
I don't know how it's big pretty, it is off the top of my head. But
the problem, I can say, having watched enough gymnastics on TV, because I'm an Olympics nerd from when I was five, the biggest problems here would be enough running space to do vault. You could theoretically smash beams and bars and pommel horse and rings on the floor, but you would not have enough space to do a vault run. And you would not have a big enough, you could maybe have a big enough square on one side. If you take the basketball hoops out for a floor routine, you took out like the, actually, if you did take out the media stuff and like the referees table and stuff like that, I think you would have enough space, but you couldn't get everything out. Like, you can only do either the vault run or the floor routine, and that's about it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Interesting. The Olympics, what was there? Was that boxing, wrestling, something like that? What do they have in Alexander?
Boxing. Yeah,
well, that was pre-renovation, so it was a big circle, so they probably had more space then too.
Yeah, it made a lot more sense there. Yeah, I mean, you just need a lot of force. And then also when you watch the Olympics, like, they have the floor, but then they have the part below the floor that's still on the floor, where they have like the holding areas, the benches, the scoring tables, all that kind of other stuff. So if you really threw a meet at McCamish, the scorer's table would be in the stands, and they would have only access to the visiting and home basketball locker rooms. So you wouldn't even be able to like really hold athletes, and these meets are always 100 people or so.
In elite gymnastics, they have basically what they call the podium, which is that elevated surface that they like, I don't know, they basically elevate the surface and put the equipment on top. But typically in college, they just don't have that. They're just sticking it right on the floor, like anchoring it in however they need to. So it doesn't, probably wouldn't take as much space as like, say, the Olympics. Like, you just need floor, vault, beam, bars. The problem, I think, comes in, like you were saying, that you can't really fit the floor and the vault. And also, you need a lot of like room to fall, essentially. You need room
Yes.
You can't just cram everything together, because you don't want to run into stuff as you fall off equipment.
Yeah. It's the reason why the diving well is a full 25-yard pool at the pool. Like, that's, you don't want to run into another board or another platform or whatnot.
Yep.
So
what I was going to add before we get off of it, I did want to actually like do the math on this one.
Great.
Just to confirm, because I just got very curious. So the floor size, the performance area is 39 feet by 39 feet, and the border around the floor is about 3.3 feet, like a meter around. So keep that in mind. For a basketball court, so a NBA court, that is 94 feet by 50 feet. So you have enough space within the outline, within the area of a basketball court for the floor. However, just the run-up area for the vault is 115 feet.
There you go.
So it is longer than the length of a NBA court, and then also it's a meter wide. So, yeah, you literally would not be able to fit, you just would not be able to fit a vault run up.
So if
we took the space of an NBA court,
we take out the student section benches. You start on like a downhill slope, and then you get the extra feet that way. That sounds
incredible. You make them start in the tunnel.
That sounds incredibly safe.
Just build it as a bridge, you know, just straight off the concourse.
You can just circle around the court.
Maybe that's what you do. You put vault in one of the concourses up there. They got stretches like
just straight down the front steps, you know, or build it, bridge it out the front step. So in terms of facilities, it doesn't sound like any of the existing ones would make sense. You'd have to go off campus. You'd have to go to, this is sports news we haven't talked about, Jack, the Atlanta, what is it? Vibe?
Atlanta Vibe. Yes.
Vibe?
Yes.
Yeah. They're up in Gas South Arena in Duluth starting, I think, this year. Atlanta Professional Volleyball. You've got, obviously, State Farm Arena, which would be cavernous. I assume they have some retractability, given that they host concerts and whatnot there, even if there is no ice rink anymore, much to my chagrin.
They can do it.
Or the arena in College Park, which is the host of the Dream. I know that that's a fairly purpose-built as a flexible facility. Obviously, it wouldn't be ideal to be going off campus, and it'd probably be difficult to purpose build a space unless you're blowing out Zelnak or something like that, or Brock or something like that. I don't know. Maybe just put it in the football indoor. I'm sure the football team would appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the easiest place to throw a bunch of benches up. There already are a few because they do events there anyways and like viewings. So that probably is the best feasible situation because you can do climate control. You're not destroying any turf. You're not just like a surface below it. You don't need to paint or not paint over anything. And then, you get to haul in a bunch of equipment, and they have fairly large doors to haul in equipment, which McCamish does not have.
No, it definitely does not have. It's a tight footprint there. Jack, one more that you mentioned when you were brainstorming. Ken Byers, yes or no? Not a lot of stands.
Some stands. The problem is you have to basically rip out all the tennis stuff. You have to take the posts out of the floor. That's the problem. It'd be just really stretched out. And also the audio, Tiffany, I don't know how important I haven't been to a gymnastics meet where they like do proper like music for floor routines, but the audio in Ken Byers is absolutely terrible. So any song that would get played would just not be comprehensible by the time everything else was being said and happening at the same time.
Yeah, no words in floor music, but still would be annoying if you couldn't hear anything correctly.
Makes sense. And I think that it's kind of ironic that Ken Byers has the opposite problem of what we maligned at McCamish for many years about having poles in the ground when all we wanted was volleyball poles in the ground in the basketball arena. So love that for us. But I think it comes down to Brock, honestly, in terms of feasibility, barring some sort of renovation, or I don't know, the exhibition hall. Like getting a little desperate at that point. But
the elephant in the room with Brock is that unfortunately football is king. So you do have to navigate that particular problem, but if you can get past that, you are in pretty good, because that definitely, like you said, definitely has enough space.
Yeah,
fair enough. I think there was something else that I wanted to mention along the way. I cannot remember, but I mean, in terms of feasibility, it doesn't sound like a lack of interest. It doesn't sound necessarily like a lack of facilities. It sounds, you know, not necessarily that there's a perfect solution, because I would say that there's not. In terms of the last bit, the scholarships, what does that do, Jack, Akshay, to our relative position there? Because obviously the main push behind adding one of these is to be equitable and comply with Title IX, in addition to, you know, providing a sport of interest, because Tech's in a lot of debt, right? They have to make sure that they're getting the value out of it that they need. Would this help us?
Right. Scholarship wise, yes, tremendously. I don't remember the exact number, but if this chart we have in here is correct, that you get 12 scholarships with gymnastics, that might put us right on it. I know soccer's at 14. Actually, yeah, it would do it. So gymnastics would do it. Yeah, if we added gymnastics, just gymnastics, Tech would be Title IX compliant.
And that's 12 scholarships, right, that it adds?
Yeah, 12. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think I did some math before. I think adding like 13 would be the minimum to be the over. So 12 probably puts us at like
right at
0.1% off or something like that.
Yeah. So we're basically there. Yeah. I don't know what the current ramifications are. We're paying or not paying, or what's happening by not being compliant right now. So that I don't actually know for sure. But at the very least, I know this is an active problem they want to solve as an athletic department. So gymnastics certainly would be a choice that they would weigh. They wouldn't discount it immediately.
Well, I mean, the deal there is too that you're also like going to continue to assumedly trend towards more even enrollment, even if it's not, you know, ever perfectly 50-50, if you're adding to the minimum. So I think at some point you're maybe considering adding, you know, multiple, maybe you add gymnastics and women's golf, or, you know, gymnastics and the 6 scholarships for beach, or I don't know. I think that probably my main question here that we have outstanding is, what does this do for us on like the Tech competitive stage, right? It's a new sport in the ACC this coming year. Obviously, you've got Clemson adding up the road. We've talked at length about Clemson and their travails in non-revenue sports. Is this competitive trade-off something that would, you know, would it boost Tech? Would it get those eyeballs?
Yeah. So I think, I think the start of the ACC sponsoring gymnastics is a pretty big deal, at least in my mind, especially when you start, like at the beginning of a conference sponsoring a sport like gymnastics, there is really high competitiveness in that beginning couple years, especially with, right, I think a lot of people in sort of the gymnastics area assume Clemson will become fairly competitive in the next couple of years just because of the facilities they have and the money they have and all of that. But at the beginning, it almost always happens that that team is doing okay. They're not doing great, but they're never like national champions year one. So with the start of Clemson Gymnastics and ACC Gymnastics, there's a lot of opportunity to really stand out in that in gymnastics, because there's just a lot of, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but there's just like more opportunity and more of a chance to really stand out early until like SEC gymnastics is super competitive and super high level, because it's been established and those teams have done so well over so many years.
I think that makes sense. And if you think about it from a numbers game type thing, you're competing with 14 other schools for a women's or a men's basketball title, or, you know, 13 others for baseball. And if there's only four other, if Tech is the theoretical, you know, fifth team in an ACC title, you know, you're going to flip enough coins and maybe you get a little bit luckier or whatnot. Call it luck, call it skill. But if there's only, you know, five people competing, I mean, odds are that somebody's going to win sooner rather than later, but, you know, still took, you know, the Cubs 108 years to break that, despite, it'll be, you know, all that. So
it'll, but ignoring the Cubs, who I hate today.
I had to get one in, Jack. I had to get one fine. In. It's belabored, but it's fine. Sorry, not sorry.
But like, no, I mean, there is a noticeable drought of like, you can't watch high level gymnastics in the city of Atlanta. And there's a lot of people that would very much like to, because there's enough Olympic nerds from 96 still around that would kill to see an event like that again in the city. It just, there's so many kids gymnastics gyms out there. Like my sister did a lot of gymnastics growing up and not her thing now, but like, any 8-year-old girl in the city would probably have the time of their life going to this, to a meet like this. Like, I heavily thought about going to Auburn to see Suni Lee, cause I'm like, I've never been geographically closer to a current Olympian doing gymnastics with feasibility to get to a meet. And if that was here, that'd be massive. That'd be massive. And if it's in any of these existing ideas of where they'd put it at Tech, it'd sell out in seconds too. Like, that's, unless they put it in State Farm, but that's going to be once a year at best.
Well, it's a completely new audience too. And I think that's right. The point that we've been circling around is there's, obviously connections to Tech that, you know, go out of their way to get involved watching club sports. I mean, men's lacrosse and hockey are great draws. Soccer, men's and women's get some good crowds, but I don't know. I mean, that there doesn't seem to be that same, no offense, Tiffany, following of the club gymnastics team. And if you can get them in front of more eyeballs, it's good for the sport in the city too.
Yeah.
So, but, all right. I think that kind of hits all my major points that I had. Jack, Akshay, Tiffany, what else do we need to consider? What have we missed?
Leave it to Tiff.
I was just going to say, the team that has the most national championships in gymnastics is UGA. So it would be great to compete with them, I think. That would be cool. Yeah, I have nothing beyond that. Just would be nice.
I think that's a good enough reason.
Clearly, they've been recruiting successfully in the area. Why not us, right?
I think gymnastics is not as heavily like people wanting to stay in state. I think it because there are so few schools that have gymnastics, a lot of people have to go really far to get to get the experience that they want. So gymnastics is not so much like, oh, this kid wants to stay in state, so that's why they're on this team. But it is still definitely a draw.
To that point, reading off Georgia's roster and their hometowns here, I see Hampton, Virginia, Millstone Township, New Jersey, Kings Park, New York, Evans, Georgia, which sounds like it's in South Georgia, but that's me shooting from the hip, Chesapeake, Virginia, Johns Creek, Port Crane, New York, Bradenton, Florida, Santa Cruz, California, Atlanta, Rockville, Tennessee, Independence, Missouri. You get the point. It is,
yeah,
it is like they are not just recruiting from one of these girls is from Vancouver. And anyway, I'm closing the tab before my computer gets infected with a virus. But it's a national sport with national recruiting ability. And I think what we've seen from other sports, other non-revenue sports, tech has had an ability to pull kids from anywhere in the nation and also internationally, right? I think with volleyball and swimming, with women's and men's swimming, we've seen international talent come into our pipeline from Turkey and Brazil, right? I think you can have a similar, that can translate, right? I don't see why that wouldn't be able to translate in this case.
Yeah. I just thought of a great thing that I need to check out sometime. And that's the number of D1 sponsors of a sport versus the high school participation level adjusted for roster size. I think that'd be phenomenal. But where I was going with this is there are 16,232 participants at the high school level in the most recent NFHS survey. That's pretty in line with women's water polo. They have about 18,000. Obviously, there are sports with more, there are sports with less. But I think given its perception, the numbers that we know it draws on TV, for the amount of schools participating, there could probably be more afforded to gymnastics, just given that relatively robust population, relatively small number of active participants. So, and given there's been a lot of success in the area, seems like it's ripe for, you know, tech to throw its hat in the ring as well. Tiffany, it's been great having you on. Obviously, we are, you know, relying on experts to come in and bring their opinions, their experiences. So we do thank you for being a part of it in an ongoing off again, on again, off again summer series of what sports should tech add next.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been a good time.
You're welcome anytime. Gents, I think that means that it is time for our favorite part of the episode. And that's when I get to talk about Section 103. Section 103 is Georgia Tech's most Georgia Tech apparel brand. I think it is fair to say that it's Tech's most tech apparel brand. Section 103 creates great designs, old and new, including NIL, which is some of the newest stuff you can have in college sports. Kind of at least where I saw NIL going is being able to buy a Donte Smith shirt or be able to buy a Zach Pyron shirt. Granted, I was first thinking about this like 4 or 5 years ago, so that was probably, you know, buying like a Jahmyr Gibbs or Justin Thomas shirt. But, you know, times change. We evolve. Maybe there'll be a Harrison Butker jersey someday. Would love that too. Section 103 does not have that yet, but they do have Smith and Pyron for sure in navy, white, and gold. Go check that out wherever fine shirts are sold. And that's section103.com. They're on Twitter? Question mark as well. I don't know
X
what you
now.
Call that now.
What is Twitter?
They're on X. Love that for everyone. It's definitely not confusing.
I'm not calling it X. I'm just never calling it X. That's just not happening. That's just
don't
not happening.
Do him the don't do him the service of calling it X. Just call it Twitter. The same way that don't call Facebook their stupid new name. Just call it Facebook.
Well, all that said, you can find Section 103 there too at Section 103, free shipping on orders over 70 every day. And hopefully we'll see some stuff in addition real soon. But in the meantime, check out new favorites and old favorites at section103.com. Gents, what else is going on in the world of tech sports?
I'm glad you asked, Mr. Grant. Thank you again for leading us through that interview. And thank you, Tiffany, for your time today. Folks, it's the beginning of football season. August practice, fall practice has begun, despite the temperature in Atlanta today being 85 degrees and humid as hell. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of news from practice, other than a couple of bits and bobs here and there. Not a lot of news, especially out of the quarterback depth chart. Don't really have an idea of who is going to be the starting quarterback on September 1st versus Louisville. That's being kept pretty close to the vest. Not a lot of big news coming out of Fan Day either yesterday, but the biggest news item of the weekend was that LaMiles Brooks was placed on the Danny Werfel Trophy watch list. Jack, do you want to read out his CV for me, please?
The Danny Werfel Trophy is much more of a community service-focused award, less a on-field award, but obviously I'd be playing to get this award. For those that don't know, Danny Werfel actually lives in Atlanta. He does a lot of really good stuff with some organizations in the city. I've gotten the chance to meet him one time and watch his kid play ball because he played in my same part of Atlanta. So really good dude if you ever get the chance to meet him. And so, yeah, the award focuses a lot on humanitarian stuff and the stuff that they've listed for LaMiles, which, and this is not the whole list. He was part of a trip to Puerto Rico with Jackets Without Borders in May of last year to help rebuild some homes from Hurricane Irma and Maria back in 2017. I actually did go on a similar service trip a couple of years ago, like 2 years after the hurricane, and they were not doing great then either. And so it speaks to how much is still needed in Puerto Rico there. And so he was part of that. He was also on an organization called Four Others, which helps prevent vulnerable children from being placed in the foster care system. And so they get better places to be in that case. He's also part of the Michael Eisenhower Toy Drive, which is an annual service project spearheaded by the Student Athlete Advisory Board. They help deliver toys throughout the city through the Atlanta Children's Shelter, and then did some work with CHOA and Scottish Rite, spent time with kids and parents and stuff like that. So that's all from a text press release. And there's more on that list we did mention, but it's really great stuff that LaMiles is doing. And I'm glad anytime we get to mention the off-field work that the student athletes at Tech do, because they do a lot of that and they do a lot of really good stuff with that too. And it's one of the major perks of being a student athlete at Georgia Tech is you get to make a huge dent in the community if you want, and not just in the local community, elsewhere in the world as well.
Just some more context on the trophy itself. It has been given out since 2005. Some former winners, Sam Acho of Texas in 2010, Matt Barkley of USC. God, I haven't heard that name in a while. In That's 2012, wild, yeah. Trevor Knight in 2016. That was when he was at Texas A&M. The last winner in 2022 was Dylan Gibbons, who was an offensive lineman at Florida State. I think that's all I have for the football, like the Tech football specific news. Gents, specifically Jack, do we have to talk about realignment again? Do we have to? I'm begging you, bail me out of this.
You please. Can stay so silent tired. If you want. You don't need to talk about it if you don't want to specifically. I just want to, I feel like we need to know, I want to note some math here specifically, because I did do the number crunching on if with the new schools, with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that departed the Pac-12.
Before we get there, let's, every podcast is someone's first. Okay, let's talk about what happened in the week since we recorded and the West Coast decided to, Bugs Bunny saw itself off from the rest of the college football world.
Last week we talked about the Pac-12, then the Pac-9, because Colorado had left, and there was like, okay, what happens here now? And we weren't really sure yet, and there was a lot of back and forth between would the Pac-12 stick around? Would they sign a grant of rights? Was anyone else going to leave? Were they going to poach? Were they going to grab San Diego State? We didn't know. And so after meetings and rejecting a grant of rights, Utah, Arizona State, and Arizona went to the Big 12, and Washington and Oregon went to the Big 10 and were unanimously confirmed by their school chancellors the days of. That was all five schools moved in a single day, one single day. So the Pac-9 then is now the Pac-5, Pac-4. No, I think it's the Pac-4 right now. So Pac-4. Yeah, that conference is dead. They presented a $20 billion a year media rights deal. That was, I believe, Apple was going to be the main vehicle for that. which was less than what they are getting now in their current deal with Fox and other networks.
To be clear, $20 million a year is accounting for the lack of USC and UCLA, which, to be fair, right, those are large revenue generators, and like those are large TV brands. If yep. at the end of the day, the entirety of conference realignment is based around the raw number of eyeballs that you can bring to a specific conference, that is an extreme motivating factor. So yep. you like $20 million a year is I'm not going to argue whether that's a good or a bad evaluation based on the 9 teams that were left, but that was the deal on the table. And they failed to get full consensus in a whatever morning meeting between all 9 remaining schools. They failed to sign a grant of rights. And then Oregon and Washington signed with the Big Ten a couple of hours later. And then by the end of the day, Arizona State and Utah had the most to the Big 12. So pretty, pretty rough day for West Coast college athletics. The last thing I want to say on this, one of the concessions that Oregon and Washington have made in order to sign up for their the Big Ten is that they're taking a 35 or the first 2 years, the first 7 years of their TV revenue is locked to $35 million per year. $35 to $40 million per year, okay, compared to the constantly increasing up to, I believe, $90 million that the rest of the Big Ten is getting out of their deal. So
and that 35 to 40 number is about what the ACC schools are making now, but still is more than they were going to get if they stayed in the Pac-12. If the Pac-12 didn't move, they were still going to get less than that. So it was a step. Even if it's less relative to their conference, it's still more than they were getting alternatively.
Yeah, I'll add that, I think someone said this in a writer's room, the life raft doesn't come free. Like, you had to make a concession here.
Yeah.
At a certain level. Like you said, it's the ACC average annual value that the ACC is getting out of their grant of rights. Pretty concerning, I think, just from a competitive perspective. Yeah. If you were talking about whole athletic department competitiveness on a revenue basis, that they are going to be making 50% less than literally everyone else in their conference. And that is just a continuation of the same exact problem that we have seen in college athletics. When it comes to this stuff. So
yeah,
it's just, you know, like, it sucks. And I think, Jake, you have a little bit more of a detailed take on this, but I have no original opinion other than to say this just stinks. It all stinks.
Yeah. It does stink. I don't necessarily think my take is any more original than anything that's been put out there, but I think it's worth noting that Stanford is year in and year out and up there with Cal, one of the most successful athletic programs in the country. Heck, they win or are in the mix for the Director's Cup every year. They had national seeds in baseball, women's basketball and volleyball, I believe, this year. It's not even just football driving the bus. If you're talking about wanting to do something for the perspective of athletes, sending folks from Eugene to Piscataway, for a, you know, whether it's a weekend series or a Tuesday night basketball game, that's insanity. It's not what people sign up to watch and partake in college sports for. It just isn't. Part of the thing that makes it special is the tradition, the rivalries, the seeing the guy down the street. Whether it's the people you grew up with or the people you went to school with or nearby, it's something that you get into because of the regionality of the sport it's really similar to baseball in that way. I don't think it's as athlete or personality driven. I think it's in the most part driven by, just the proximity. And I think you know, taking that away is a bummer in and of itself. You know, it's a bummer to lose the Apple Cup or whatever they're calling Oregon's game these days. I know that's changed names a couple of times in the same way that, you know, wow, it's cool to get Texas A&M back. But at what cost? Right. You're losing Bedlam and all these things that are cool. And I think at the end of the day, yeah, you could say, oh, well, it'd be a little bit better if the Big Ten was taking Cal and Stanford with them, or Cal, Stanford, Wazoo and Oregon State. But at the end of the day, I don't think you're going to get to what things, quote unquote, used to be, shy of just having one really big league, whether that's the quote unquote Power Five, whether that's quote unquote the FBS, whether that's just all of Division One. I think it means more to be playing games that fans care about and not chasing TV sets or whatever the heck you'd think is driving stuff these days. And also, as an addendum, not really sure how they got the Oregon, Washington, you know, 35 or whatever million higher, which is higher than the Pac 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5 deal that was offered, and saying that they're worth more just because they're in association with properties that they've, you know, never really played before or ever. I don't think a lot of the numbers really make all that much sense, but I'm sure that's another podcast topic in and of itself. Sorry, rambling, but that's just kind of what I do.
Two notes on that. I've always said that, well, not on the podcast, but I've always said that like startup valuations are entirely fake to both of you, or at least to you, Jake, I think. I think media rights valuations are just kind of vibes. I mean, they're somewhat sourceable vibes because live sports are the only thing that people pay cable prices for these days, effectively. So, like, you could still make a bunch of money on cable just off of live sports. But I'm not an economist. I'm not a TV marketing guru, so I'm not going to speak out of line there. I think the thing that you mentioned about non-road sports and sending, like, doing these cross-country trips just for like a hoot and holler, that sort of thing, is like, we've had multiple Pac-12, former Pac-12 athletes now come out and say, like, I chose to play softball at, I think this was like an Oregon softball player that I saw a tweet from, like, I chose to play softball at Oregon because I knew I would be able to see, I would be able to go on the road and see my family. And now I have to go to, now I have to go play in New Jersey, like, and cross country, and I can't see, like, I won't be able to see my family at away games anymore. Like, I think the impact on the actual athletes specifically is also something that is, I don't know if we're talking about that enough. I think a lot of the national discourse has relied on, wow, the Pac-12 is dead because it couldn't make money. Boo hoo. And we're kind of not acknowledging that there's like, this sounds
thousands,
like very,
thousands of athletes that are heavily impacted here.
Like, yeah, this there's a human cost, like, not
there's
to
a
be
real cost here.
It, there's a
yeah,
human
there
cost
is.
Here.
There really is. Yeah. There is a psychological effect here of these athletes who are just going to like lose a ton of like literally losing sleep. The most important thing they have as any college person will testify to is sleep, and they're going to lose so much
sleep and water, sleep and drink water.
So much
of it
they're going
to
lose. Yeah.
Things that you need to do at college and get free stuff. And I think this is very poignant. Amen. That we had an actual active athlete on our podcast 2 weeks ago and have immediately followed with 2 weeks of discussing realignment after hearing just how much goes into the travel that they're already. And Louisville's not like terribly far from the rest of the ACC. I've done the math on where folks are located relative to the other. Yeah, Boston College and Miami, they're going long ways, but relatively centrally located, relatively easy to get to preseason tournaments in Florida. It's a, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour flight, depending on where you're going in the state. That's
critically, and, they're not changing time zones barely ever. Like, they're fine.
And you're playing with softball and baseball, those midweek games, you're going to be, if you're Tech, you're playing Auburn, you're playing
the locals,
UGA,
you're playing
Georgia State.
Yeah.
If you're Louisville, you're playing Bellarmine, you're playing Indiana, you're playing Kentucky. Like, those are, like, at the end of the day, that's also kind of the games of interest, if you will. You know, like the Southern versus
away.
Tech baseball game.
Just a
that's
drive
really
away.
Interesting game. Yeah. Auburn, Tech, you know, softball.
Awesome.
Really interesting context.
Awesome. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're doing these things for football, which is driving the bus. And if you look at the, I've done some math while we've been talking about gymnastics, so I'm going to get this out there while I can. If you look at scholarship numbers outside of football, which has 11 guys play at a time, there are 85 scholarships, vastly disproportionate to the active number of athletes. If you discount that 85 from the Tech count, Tech only has 141 scholarships. So you're sitting at, what does that math make out to be? It's like 52, I think, without football, like, or 56.2 without football included. It's really driving the bus for the entire like athletic outlay too. And we think about it in terms of coaching salaries and travel expenses, because, you know, they're flying, they're not getting on a bus in a lot of cases, but the Tech athletic department is not outlaying a ton of scholarships to men outside of that football team. And we're talking about us being, you know, 13, 14 scholarships under that. I don't know. That's not necessarily realignment related, and no shame on Tech for, you know, following the rules and having 85 scholarship players. But like, at the end of the day, you're really driving the bus for one sport, and it affects it on so many more levels than I think you get just outside of travel or money or whatnot. So
It was good. Glad we wrapped it back to Tech, because, you know, we did ask the question last week, does this change anything for Tech? At that time, it was like, probably not. This grant of rights thing is still as lock solid as it is. And now it probably looks even better. Once again, yes, the money's not going to match up to the SEC, Big 12, Big 10. We know this. FSU tried to figure out a way out of it, and they had a hissy fit on a phone call and couldn't figure a way out.
For those that didn't hear Bubba Cunningham's comments, was that he was based UNC's athletic director. He's basically just like, pay up. you pay. Like, that's
your, I mean, do you blame him though? Like,
that's the only out. That's the only out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, since Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12 or announced that they were leaving the Big 12, very many smart lawyers, I imagine, have looked at the grant of rights document, which we found online a couple weeks ago.
Hours.
Very many smart lawyers have looked at that like 6-page document and have not found a single way out of it other than paying an exit fee and buying back your TV rights from the conference.
Yep.
I did the math a couple of days ago, but let me do it again real quick. If on average an ACC school makes $35 million a year off of the grant of rights, and there are 13 years left in the deal, that means you're a single ACC school's TV rights for the remainder of the GOR counts, costs approximately $455 million. There is no athletic program or no school that is willing to spend nine figures in cash, straight cash, to do that right now. What will end up happening is that they will buy out the last two or three years of the GOR, like Texas and Oklahoma did to just cut and leave. They paid like $50 million to the Big 12 to buy back their rights for the last 2 years, and then they've amused. That is exactly what is going to happen.
And no chancellor president is going to be like, yes, let's pay $900 million for this versus something else we could use the $900 million for.
It would be a colossal blunder.
Yeah. Say, yeah, you know, we could build an entirely new university. It's an endowment sized lump. So yeah, I don't know what Florida State's is off the top of my head, but ours is it's north of a billion, but for a lot of schools, 900 million is, you know, an endowment sized chunk of
I'd rather
money.
See Tark
your entire investment.
I'd rather see Tech build an art school before leave the ACC over this, like something different. Something that's not bad. So yeah, I think your point's right, actually. Like, there's no reason to do this now if it's going to cost that much. It's going to be on ESPN to be like, hey, we have new priorities now that just happen to not be the ACC.
But like, imagine, like on paper, like imagine, or not really on paper, imagine the practical consequences of a university president saying we're spending $500 million of our own money in cold hard cash in one go to pay off, to buy back our TV rights.
It's nuts.
And leave
it's nuts.
This conference.
It's nuts. No, like only like Ohio State and Bama could like make even a semblance of an argument that they could get that money back. But like, no, even then, no.
You want to know the main thought that's rattling around in my head right now? My brother, Big Ten grad, texted me yesterday. Hey, I saw this on ESPN. I don't know how I love it, but I was wondering, do you even think about it as an ACC fan? Because, you know, Big Ten, he don't want to go out to Eugene, or, you know, thinking about athletes, all that good stuff. He's like, do you even think about this? Does this even move the needle for like you as an ACC fan? And I was like, even outside of like our league not changing, it hasn't changed composition since Louisville came into the league. And, you know, we've had a conference died last week and it didn't really send a shockwave. Even outside of that, all this is doing is kind of agglomerating all these outside forces, and the ACC is kind of like in the eye of the hurricane. At least that's how I feel. Like, yeah, it hasn't affected the conference, but oh, there goes, you know,
we've made something so rigid that even this craziness can't kill it unless college football itself dies. Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's rigid. I would say that it's too high of a barrier to exit, right? Like, there's a difference between contractual rigidity and just bad, like, the
contract
like,
language
preventing the ability to spend money poorly. That's basically what they've done here. And I will say that, like, there is a consequence here. I think Florida State, because they're still saber rattling about this, has looked in, is hooked up with a private equity firm to generate investment to see if they can raise the money, or assumedly see if they can raise the money to buy out their TV rights and conferences. I think it was with Sixth Street was the investment firm, and they were working with JP Morgan Chase to actually raise the money. But this is not good.
No,
this is
so
terrible.
Weird. It's so weird. Like, it's so weird.
You,
I mean, they
the
just
thing that we talk about. Well, before you go, but like the thing that we talk about with like professional sports organizations when private equity gets involved is that as soon as you stop making a profit, not even sports organizations. Let me back up here. As you talk about private equity getting involved in corporations, and let's take tech companies for an example, right? As soon as a startup gets venture capital funding, but as soon as they stop making a profit or stop growing or like taking out loans for it gets expensive in terms of interest rates, it all becomes about what is the return on investment? What is the actual cash flow? What is the actual profit? And the way that these companies end up creating profit on their balance sheets is by shedding expenses, right? Layoffs, cutting R&D, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not an industrial engineer, not a consultant, but like this is how these things work, at least as far as I understand it. You're now functionally applying those same constraints to an athletic department, which yes, makes money, and yes, makes money at a steadily growing rate, right? Just because of the nature of TV rights and the way that those valuations grow over time. But they are never going to provide the increasingly growing return on investment that a private equity firm or a venture capital, like that type of firm is looking for.
Yeah.
And this is just the chances that Florida State Athletics gets stripped for parts like a Twitter would are incredibly minimal.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the fact of the matter is that you have opened the door to being required to return a profit, which yes, they do, but like required to generate growth metrics, which is not necessarily a productive function of an athletic department.
Yep. No. If anything, it's just this past week makes more sense to just make football its own thing. The idea has been there for a long time. If it's going to act so much different than the rest of the sports, maybe you chop it off. I don't know for sure, because you still need to fund everything else. But it's truly, truly operating in a world of its own now, that it's still too tied to everything else for it to make any sense right now.
And it just goes to show that no one's in charge. Like, has Charlie Baker said anything? Has the NCAA said anything about this? Like,
this is why we're the student athlete.
Like,
they can't do anything.
I don't know.
They legally can't do anything. The entire point of the 1984, the 1985, like NCAA versus the University of Oklahoma and University of Georgia is an antitrust ruling. They cannot interfere in TV contracts.
They haven't broken an NCAA regulation. They this is not something they touch. So, and the NCAA is formed by the schools themselves. So
like one can argue that there is like, and I think this is a point that you were coming around to before I interrupted you, Jake. But like, there's an athlete welfare issue at stake here, and I think there's a point that there's like a point to be made there. But at the end of the day, if they take any action, it's an immediate antitrust violation. Like there's nothing that they can really do about it. Like they can't block these TV deals. They can't interfere with it. There's already legal precedent directly against them. So it's just something that they have to figure out. Like, or it's something that these conferences have to figure out more effectively. And at the end of the day, it's just going to be a continued cycle of consolidation every 10 or 15 years as more schools that are not your top 15 brands of college football just get left in whatever conference that was super conference that was previously made, and the rest of the brands move on. It will continue to happen
Rutgers is a part of this. Like, you know,
I mean,
imagine telling a Temple fan that 15 years ago, hey, Rutgers is going to be in the Big Ten and you're going to be ...
But, you know, but that's the reality, right? Like, I mean, one of the realities of that is that Rutgers is not going to be in whatever the Big Ten SEC conglomerate, like top level of the sport, happens forever. They are going to get left behind. I think people keep saying like schools are not or will get kicked out. It's never going to be that they get kicked out. They're going to be left behind by future cycles of realignment, which is same outcome but a key different mechanism. It's not like no one gets kicked out of these conferences. It's always that you get left behind. So we'll just have to wait and see what the future of college athletics looks like. And it looks increasingly, or top line college athletics, excuse me, looks like over the next 10 years. And even over the next couple of months, right? The Pac-12 still has to figure out. It's still has to figure out what it looks like at four teams. The ACC at any point, maybe someone figures out a way to get out of the grant of rights. Right. It's entirely possible. There was a situation in Texas where I believe Texas Tech breached a contract with Mike Leach, and the state of Texas protected the school from via sovereign immunity in that case and said that the school can't be held liable for breach of contract for any material damages. That's something that I saw batted around on social media as something that Florida State could use to their advantage. If that's part of Florida law, I'm not an expert, obviously. There's a lot of different paths to go down here, but I think at the end of the day, like all of them suck. Like I think we have passed the Rubicon. We passed the Rubicon, right?
Yeah,
like,
no, it does not get
better from here.
Friday was worse. Friday was the great consolidation day that we knew was theoretically possible in there somewhere of there being a sense of a mass exodus that happened all at once. And it finally happened. So it feels like on the J curve, the acceleration towards whatever the new normal is going to be. Like, I don't think we're done yet at all. I mean, we can't be done yet because the Pac-12 still has to figure some stuff out, as you said. But yeah, I feel like there's still some dominoes that are going to keep falling here. We're not done yet.
Any final notes before we move on to trivia to end on a happy note?
Georgia Tech plays.
Be that happy.
Oh, I mean, wait, we play sports this month against teams that we knew we were supposed to play in the first place.
Hooray.
College athletics, it's such a time to be alive. Mr. Grant, trivia, you're up.
So today's theme is Texas for slightly obvious reasons. And I was trying to consider something that was maybe a little bit more honed in, but I like how this one went. So it's pretty straightforward. All time, Georgia Tech and Texas have faced each other 21 times. not going to make you guess the win percentage in those contests because it's 5-16. It's very not fun. It's a 238 win percentage all time. Among those 21 contests and that win percentage, there are three schools or organizations in which Tech has played at least a dozen times and has resulted in a lower win percentage. Can you guess those three organizations or schools? And I will give you a hint. Two of the three have been mentioned in the previous segment.
Repeat the whole question one more time for the class.
Texas and Georgia Tech have faced off 21 times, resulting in a 238 win percentage across all sports in which we have records. Tech has played three other schools or organizations at least a dozen times and has yielded a lower win percentage. Name those three organizations. And your hint is,
and you said two of the three
have been mentioned in the previous segment.
So it has to be at least a dozen times. So I don't think that they played a ton of these West Coast teams more than a dozen times. I know it's not Stanford. I don't think it's Stanford, at least.
Stanford and Georgia Tech have played 19 times. That is good for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11th highest win percentage. They have a 368. So Stanford is not the correct answer.
Oh.
Also, I don't think we mentioned Stanford. Well, we didn't.
We didn't. In a glancing.
I said Stanford. I said another school in the same sentence. But
yes.
Cal
is the not the next lowest win percentage, but two lower than that. We have faced Cal 27 times across all sports, resulting in a 222 win percentage. That's 6-21 for those counting at home. And one of those six wins is the 1928 Rose Bowl, and largely thanks to Roy Regis running the wrong direction. So, you know, we haven't won a lot out there, but we've made it count. There's one school and one organization remaining.
There is
organization.
I don't think this is correct.
Air Force?
That's a school. Jack, what
it's
were
also
you
an what? It's also an organization.
I went through the volleyball like record book recently and I saw we have a 2-11 record against West Georgia all the time in volleyball. But I feel like we played them at everything else. So I'm not confident in that answer.
That's also a school. The school that is remaining on this list has been mentioned. They are currently a member of the Big Ten. Well, Rutgers. They will be in a couple of years.
Oregon?
No. Oh, bamboo. Nope. USC.
It is USC. We faced them 17 times for 235 win percentage. The only other organization in which Tech has a worse winning percentage, having played at least a dozen times, is the Atlanta Athletic Club. We've played them in baseball, basketball, men's basketball, and I believe football. We are 2-12 all time for a 143 win percentage.
I would love to just get some random dudes from that club and just get our records straight. Just get it over 500 against this club.
Go get a Miles Kelly. Come on.
Just go put the golf team out there. Just have them play some matches for a couple days. Get our numbers back.
Yes.
Technically still exist, by the way. Oh, technically yeah. still exist.
Oh.
Are for the edification of our listenership before Jake says it, and I want because I want to say it first. They were founded in 1898, originally on Edgewood Avenue. They moved to a facility on Auburn Avenue. They actually owned a golf course on East Lake at Riverbend. Or no, the Riverbend one was in Duluth, but they owned the East Lake Country Club until the late 60s. And then they all moved up to Johns Creek, which is exceedingly lame, but whatever.
It's exceedingly Atlanta in the 60s, as we've talked about on a few history podcasts in the past, especially given the flight out of Auburn and Edgewood. I do want to round this out, taking us away. There are, I mentioned that Stanford was the 11th lowest 11th lowest of organizations we've played at least a dozen times. Between Texas and Stanford, you'll find UCLA a 258 on 31 attempts. Michigan 9-24 for a 273 on 33 attempts. Utah 4-8 for a clean dozen. Oklahoma 6-11 all time. That's 353. Pepperdine 8-14, 364. South Carolina 73-128-2 for a 365 win percentage and 203 all-time games. Go figure. Then you've got Stanford and Louisville at a 47-80 on 127 attempts for a 370 win percentage, rounding out those at a Notre Dame or lower win percentage. Notre Dame being a team, a school against which we are famously snake bitten. Anything else before we wrap it up, boys?
No, no, other than yes, it's extremely Atlanta that the Atlanta Athletic Club is in Jones Creek, and that annoys me to no end. Mr. Grant, thank you for trivia, gentlemen. We will be previewing volleyball next week at their preseason in earnest. Mr. Grant, please take us home.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the trivia. Hopefully everyone enjoyed our latest and greatest of our interview series. I guess it's a series. We've done it like what?
Six weeks
in a row.
This is the final summer episode because we're in preview land next week. So like, we racked up the interviews this summer. We did a good job.
But between current beat writers, old beat writers, active athletes, club athletes, authors, guys who crunch a lot of data, that's for you, Tony. I don't know how you fit in your exact title to this role. Everyone who's been a part of making this summer, I'd say our most diverse lineup of content maybe ever. Thank you. We really do appreciate it. We thank everyone who's been listening this summer for sticking with us. We're excited to get into volleyball and football in the coming weeks. Get your tickets now if you haven't already, but we'll talk more about how you can follow the teams as they get underway. In the meantime, I won't spoil any more content that's to come. There's going to be a lot of it, and we'll be bringing it to you. You can find us at fromtherumbleseat.com for the written word. We put up articles with this. You can comment there. Let us know what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're thinking. You can also email us at fromtherumbleseat@gmail.com. Message us at FTRS blog. Tweet at us. I'm at Jake Grant 98. Jack's at Jack Nicholas. You can find the both of us on Threads. I think Jack's on Blue Sky as well. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat for the site. You can find Section 103 at section103.com and wherever fine shirts are distributed. I guess that's just section103.com. Hopefully more to come there. And you can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We really do appreciate it. And even though the summer is ending, please feel free to give us your comments, your ideas for future episodes. We will try to work them in as time allows. And in the meantime, we'll talk to you next week with volleyball content. Good night, good luck, and go Jackets.